I'd like now to welcome to the program Martha Braniff. She's a child advocate. She's author of the new novel, Step Over Rio, and she will be at Collected Works Bookstore on Monday, the 26th of March at 6 in the evening, presenting the book in conversation with Susan Burke. Welcome, Martha, to the Radio Cafe.
Thank you.
So how did you become involved with the issue of human trafficking, which is the central theme of your novel?
I became involved because I started the Houston Court-Appointed Special Advocate Program, which is like CASA First in Santa Fe, where volunteers work with abused kids. Unfortunately, a lot of domestic trafficking victims are foster children and runaway youth who have been in the Child Protective Service system. So that was one of the ways I got involved. The other was through working with two boys from Central America who had come into the country after civil wars in El Salvador. They were brought in by some traffickers, and we were able to rescue them from these people.
When children like that are brought in by traffickers, I mean, first of all, how are they identified as potential victims for trafficking of this kind?
The majority of kids that are coming in from Central America and Mexico are children from impoverished families. They have no educational or work opportunities in their own countries, and their families sometimes pay a coyote or a human smuggler to bring them into the States. Sometimes they get in on their own and then become victims of traffickers after they get here. And then a lot of these traffickers promise the children and youth and families that these kids will have legitimate jobs when they get here. And then when they arrive, they are either forced into a labor situation where they may be coerced to work on a ranch or in restaurants, citrus fruit industry. But the majority, 80% of the young people, get forced into the child sex trade.
Girls and boys?
Yes.
So these children are what, just barely adolescent kids?
They are. In fact, one of the agents with whom I worked, he was with the Diplomatic Security Service in Houston, broke up a ring of 30 little Honduran girls who were ages 9 to 13 in Dallas, Texas. They were in a forced prostitution ring. So the children can be very young. The average age is 12 to 14.
Who are the Johns who are making use of these services? It's so weird to think of somebody. I mean, who are these people?
Well, really, Mary Charlotte, I think that the Johns are people from all different walks of life. There's so much money in this industry. And if you think about, well, it's the second largest criminal endeavor, if you want to call it that, in the world now, second only to drug trafficking. You can sell a child or a youth over and over again. Where you sell a drug, you sell it only once. But to answer your question, I think that it's people from from high-level professionals all the way to people that are, you know, uneducated. The profile of a John is just about anybody that'll buy the service that's interested in it.
And those are the people who tend to go unpunished when a ring is busted, is that correct?
Absolutely. Of course, some of the people that run these rings, and in my novel, the gang that's involved in it and the professionals that are involved are also involved with abusing the girls and then the prostitution. It's really, each case is individual, but I would say that the majority of time, if it is a cartel or a gang or a professional organization of people in the States that are doing this, they are also involved in the sexual abuse of these kids.
Which is part of the way they make them victims and keep them in a victim role.
Absolutely, exactly.
So who are the gangsters who are running these businesses? As portrayed in your novel, this novel is harrowing, I have to say. I mean, it's not for the faint of heart, but they're just the scum of the earth. Who are these people?
Well, I can only speak to the information that I have, and I did work with the Houston Mayor anti-gang director and also with agents at the State Department, and they identify the people that run these rings as usually organized gangs. Who also deal in prostitution and extortion, people that are ingrained in neighborhoods and control neighborhoods and are able to, in many cases, they locate the cantinas and the places of prostitution outside of the metropolitan areas, but they also keep these kids moving from motel to motel. It just depends on the kind of operation it is. It can be very cantina or bar-based. It can be hotel-based, motel-based, and the people can range from low-level gang members to very sophisticated gangs and professionals that deal with the gangs who provide the money and the expertise and are able to get these kids visas and work cards, all forged, of course.
So when you talk about these gangs, I mean, are they Americans? Are they from the countries that some of these kids come from?
Some of them are most definitely American. Some of them are have come in from Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Mexico. I mean, the cartels are involved in trafficking. And so I can tell you in the Houston area alone, and this isn't Santa Fe, but the stats for the Houston area, there are 225 gangs. Now, I'm certainly not saying they're all involved in human trafficking, but these people engage in illegal activities, and they have networks, and they contract with coyotes or human smugglers who bring these kids in. And many times, if they're from the countries where these children are coming from, they extort money from the families and threaten to kill the kids. So It's organized crime.
Is it the same people who are selling illegal drugs? I mean, the same gangs, or do they sort of separate into different factions?
It depends on the gang. I wish I could tell you exactly, but I can't, because I believe that most gangs that engage in drug trafficking are now getting involved in human trafficking because it's so profitable, like I said.
We're talking to Martha Braniff about her new novel, Step Over Rio. How did you gather the material for your novel? As I was reading through this, I thought, how does she know these things, some of which are so violent and dark and terrifying?
I know them because I know some kids who were trafficked, number one. And then number two, I was fortunate enough to be able to work with two agents at the State Department who gave me lots of nothing specific, of course, because they can't, but generalities about situations that kids encounter. And then, as I mentioned, the Houston anti-gang director also was extremely helpful. So, and now, of course, I started writing this novel in 2003, but and at that time, the information was very hard to get. Now, you can get it everywhere. There are testimonies about from kids who have been trafficked. There are victims who have come forward who have done videos and are educating police and state police and the Houston and I believe I know the Attorney General's office in Santa Fe has an anti-trafficking director now, so people are becoming more and more aware of it. It's not hard to get the information now. It was a lot harder when I first started.
It seems that in a lot of ways, the awareness of human trafficking has grown in the way that decades ago, the awareness about domestic violence was growing. It used to be that all around you, there were women who were being beaten up in their own homes. And if you knew the signs, you could recognize it, but nobody recognized it. Now we have a kind of analogous situation with human trafficking.
Exactly. And I know that the situation in my novel is perilous and harrowing, but I wanted to show the courage of this one boy and the fact that he is definitely aided by a Houston reporter and a federal agent as they work together actually to bring down the kingpins of this child slavery ring. And it's a triumphant story, even though the situation that he comes from is very, very disturbing. But the fact is that these kids are not leaving those countries and trying to get into the United States because they have wonderful lives.
When these kids are rescued, how do they heal? What resources are for them? Is it even possible to heal from the kinds of things that they went through?
That's a very good question, and I feel like that there are some outstanding rescue organizations now who understand how to deal with these kids who have been victimized. I believe that the ability to heal from this depends on a lot of things with each individual child, so you can't generalize. But certainly the level of care that they receive is going to be a major impact on how they recover. I think that there are probably several hundred shelters now that are being established nationwide, some of them for internationally trafficked kids and some of them for domestic trafficked victims. They are going to need a lot of care and a lot of counseling and a lot of self-esteem building, all the things that we think about that has to happen when someone has been literally imprisoned and brutalized.
When I think about the people I know, the friends I have, some of whom were raped at the age of 7, 8, or 9, something like that, one incident, lifelong post-traumatic stress, with a repeated ongoing abuse that can last for years, I mean, that's where it becomes almost unthinkable. And then you think, okay, this kid is from Guatemala or Honduras or El Salvador. Does the child go home? Does the child get adopted by a family here in the United States? What happens to that kid?
Well, and it's very hard to generalize right now about what happens to the kid because we're, just like you said, it's becoming a crime that everyone is now aware of. There are several organizations that work to place these kids in foster homes here in the United States, and many of them are probably, and this is my projection on this, they're going to be raised in the shelter that they are placed and given not only psychological care, but job skills, survival skills, until they reach an age where they can operate on their own. Catholic Charities has a big program to assist these victims, and in fact, that was the organization that helped me place those two boys from Salvador. This happened 30 years ago. It was happening, and so there are a lot, and there. I don't have a list of all the organizations that are now taking up and creating shelters, but there are many. The outcome for these kids is going to depend on, like I said, the kind of care and the child's own resilience and ability to recover from this kind of experience. I guess we could liken it to the recovery of a person who has been unlawfully imprisoned and treated badly. We know that some people recover very quickly from that and some people don't.
Martha Braniff, how have you learned to recognize the signs, and how can we recognize the signs of human trafficking, of child trafficking?
Well, there are several ways that you can If it's a domestic traffic situation where a child is in a school situation, they start missing school, they start, if they had decent grades, their grades start falling, they start wearing seductive clothing, they have a huge behavior shift. For kids who are trafficked in cantinas and motels and hotels, I think that just becoming aware of the fact that if a girl, particularly a young girl, is with a man, she looks improperly dressed, possibly abused, not well fed, to notify the authorities. There is a national hotline that anyone can call to report suspected trafficking.
You were involved in basically rescuing these Central American children. What was that? I mean, what happened? Were the rescuers in that situation in danger? I would think it's, I mean, getting in between a gangster and their money-making activities is not exactly a safe thing to do.
Well, the situation that I was in, I started an art program in the Houston Juvenile Detention Center, and these two boys were picked up by juvenile authorities and placed in the detention center, and they had done nothing but try to get out of Salvador during that civil war. So and they were going to get sent back down there, and it was a very dangerous situation. So actually a friend of mine and I found out that there was going to be a federal court hearing where the case was actually going to be disposed and they were going to be returned. And so we went to the hearing and kept interrupting the judge and asking, please, if he could wait and not send these kids back. And so we highly irritated him, and he called for a recess and took us in his chambers, told us that these boys had no rights, that no one could speak for them. Now, this was 30 years ago, and I'm not saying that now that kids don't have more rights, but he said that they didn't even have the right to an attorney, and we had to be quiet. And so we kept talking to him and finally convinced him that if we could find a foster home for these kids, that he would consider allowing them to stay here. And we were able to, through Catholic Charities in Houston. So that is how I first came to know the plight of these kids. But I did not have to get in between them and somebody who was trafficking them, because that is indeed very dangerous. And so I wouldn't recommend that anyone do that. If you see a child you think is being trafficked, you need to call this hotline.
The hotline is 1-888-373-7888, and that's the National Human Trafficking Resource Center, and it's open 24 hours a day, every day of the year. Martha Braniff, you have written this very vivid novel. As I was reading it, I was wondering, do you have any plans or hopes to make it into a film or a television movie or something like that?
Well, I would love for that to happen. I don't know that it will. I actually wrote the story as a screenplay first. So I do have it in screenplay format. And it would be fabulous if it became a movie or a TV program. I don't know yet.
Well, we shall see. Martha Braniff is a child advocate. She's author of the new novel, Step Over Rio. And once again, she will be at Collected Works Bookstore on Monday, the 26th of March at 6 in the evening, presenting the book and having a conversation with Susan Burke. Martha, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And I'm very happy now to welcome to the program Christopher Johnson, Megan Burns, and Vince Cadlebeck. They're all part of Meow Wolf, and they're here to talk about Meow Mélange, which is happening at the Lensic this Saturday. That's tomorrow. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Radio Cafe.
Hi, thanks.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So what's the Meow Mélange all about?
Meow Mélange is about, it's about Meow Wolf and the Lensic collaborating together in hopes that young people will start seeing the Lensic as an accessible place and a venue to do their art in, and another way for us to broaden our audience and get people that maybe don't know about us out to see what we're up to.
Yeah, we were given the opportunity to basically curate a night at the Lensic, and it was basically they came and invited us. They said, you know, like, we like what you guys are doing, and they wanted to give us that opportunity. So we figured that, you know, the best way to do that would be just open it up, like our philosophy, open it up to the community, have open auditions, and have, you know, anyone come through that wanted to be part of it. And in classic Meow Wolf fashion, we said yes to like every single act that came through.
Nice.
And so then we sort of formatted it. Within 2 hours, I think you're going to end up seeing like
16 pieces.
16 different pieces. Some of them ranging from like a minute and a half to about 15 minutes,
yeah.
Which is the play that Chris wrote.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just going to be like really kind of like, you know, fast paced from one thing to the next, ranging from singer-songwriter, collaborative efforts between media, like dancers dancing to the words of a poet with music and video happening at the same time. Some pieces will just be like sort of reality theater where you just see a person on stage and they're talking about their lives. So it's a whole range of different activity that's going to happen.
Is it all Meow Wolf members or all sorts of people from the community?
All sorts of people from the community. Actually, the majority of the performers are not Meow Wolf members.
Interesting. But it's sort of that, shall we say, kind of younger artist?
Mostly.
Yeah, but they're actually, it's not exclusive to young performers.
We have an amazing banjo player and guitar player named Tom Adler.
Oh, yeah, he's on KSFR.
Yeah, he's on KSFR. Yeah, he's
Acoustic
incredible.
Explorations, yeah.
Yeah, so he's going to be, he's one of the acts. He has a 10-minute spot where he's just going to show off, basically.
Which we're so happy to watch.
Yeah. We have a guy named Ariel, which stands for Revolution Evolution Life, Ariel. And he's an incredible, like, R&B sort of soul singer.
It's amazing.
Yeah, that kind of came out of nowhere. It's, like, incredible to watch. So, yeah, we have, you know, there's a definite range of age, media, and also, sort of walks of life around Santa Fe. People I've never, ever even met before. Yeah, absolutely.
Hence the mélange.
The mélange, yeah.
Christopher, let's talk about your piece for a second.
Okay.
I just saw a rehearsal of it. What's it about?
What's it about? Well, it's
a
revision.
It's a creature.
Yeah, kind of. Well, it's Galileda, essentially. It's a retelling of Pygmalion making Galileda and Aphrodite bringing that statue to life. In our play, the characters are Pig, Ginny instead of Galileda, and Ophidia instead of Aphrodite, but they're all there. It's all pretty much out of Ovid, and just retold as that story has been retold, you know, several times every century since it first came up.
And the costume itself is worth the pay what you wish price of admission.
Oh yeah, well you're talking about the girl playing Ginny, which is Galileda's role, and it is very cool. Lots of wires. And
the costume was designed and constructed by Sarah Bradley.
Yeah.
Nice. So all of this is happening tomorrow night.
Yeah.
It's at 7 o'clock at the Lensic. Pay what you wish. Now, you said, Megan, at the beginning that it was kind of about trying to get people who'd never really thought of the Lensic as a place that they could go and participate and be active in one way or another. Is the Lensic perceived as kind of a more, what would you call it, kind of older staid venue?
I think that just because of the kind of acts that are generally there, the price of admission, and I think there's something to be said about just how beautiful and sort of glitzy it is, that I think the general perception from a, you know, 20-somethings teen person is that this is not something that I'll ever be able to be on stage for an event there, because it has a very good reputation in our minds, but it has not always felt accessible.
Yeah. And all that will change tomorrow night.
Absolutely.
Megan Burns, Christopher Johnson, and Vince Cadlebeck of Meow Wolf, the Meow Melange, 7 o'clock at the Lensic. We will see you there. Thanks for being with us.
Cool. Thank you so much.
And I'd like now to welcome Diane Karp. She is the director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, and she's with us now just about every Friday, speaking of the arts. Welcome.
Good morning, Mary Charlotte. Good morning, Santa Fe.
Good morning, everybody. So what's your first thing you'd like to talk about today?
Well, we're gonna talk about what's happening today first. And out at IAIA, which is out on Avanupo Road, past the community college, the Museum of Contemporary Native Arts has a mural project going on with Rekka Rennie and Frank Buffalo Hyde. And the public viewing starts tonight, goes through Sunday, March 25th. It should be a fabulous, fabulous project. And I recommend that people go out. First of all, the campus is gorgeous. And secondly, it's a place where there is such amazing energy and contemporary arts going on within the construct of traditional Native perspectives. The other thing that's happening tonight, which is quite wonderful, and I sort of started the plug last week, the New Mexico Museum of Art is opening a whole slew of exhibitions. And since the new director has come, there has been such renewed energy over at the museum. So there's one wonderful exhibition called Waterscapes, photographs from the collection that include photographs by Elliot Porter and Lisette Modell and Caponegra and Ansel Adams. And it is just an extraordinary, powerful exhibition of works that have been hidden away in the photography collection for many years, and now they're out. Another exhibition is called Spring Forward, and that's you'll get a chance tonight to meet the curators, the artists, the docents. They're going to have music and refreshments. And it's the celebration of the alcove exhibitions that we talked about last week. Five Right. artists every 5 weeks. Repeat After Me, which is the fabulous exhibition by James Drake that everyone has to see. James is probably one of the most important of our contemporary artists.
He's living, a good artist.
Living in New Mexico. And he's smart and funny, and
yeah.
The show is just wonderful. What a pencil can do. There's the alcove show, there's the Treasures Seldom Seen, and what's really nice is Friday night, tonight, there will be no charge. So all of you who live in Santa Fe, get out there and check it out. Another thing that's going on that's really wonderful is the Santa Fe Arts Commission Community Gallery, which is an exhibition called Odes and Offerings, and it's a collaborative exhibition between artists and poets. It opens as well tonight, so if you're downtown, go to the New Mexico Museum, stop off at Santa Fe Arts Commission, and then get yourself out to IAIA Friday night. The thing that's going on in classical music is quite wonderful. It's the Chatter Chamber Ensemble, which is a phenomenal, phenomenally...
Yeah, we just talked to them yesterday.
Talented group. I was just going to say that. You
yeah.
spoke yesterday, so I'm not going to go into a lot of it. But it's at the Santa Fe Complex. And one of the things that's been happening in Santa Fe that's sort of marvelous in 2012 is a lot more collaboration than we've ever seen before. So that music groups are working with the complex, and we've got poets and artists. It's a really good vibe going down where people are beginning to reach their hands out to each other and say, times are tough, let's try and do this together.
I have to say that there's also a cat of the week, even though I know you're still talking about Friday night.
Oh no, cats are always good on Friday night. Cats are good anytime.
Cats are good at 9 a.m. when you can go meet beautiful, charming, amusing, playful, and well-socialized cats of all ages from Felines and Friends. And this week's featured cat is Tiger Lily. She's quiet, calm, and affectionate with an easygoing disposition. And she loves attention and lap time and is faithful about using her litter box and scratching post. She's a good cat. She got along with the dog in her former home. She was relaxed and well-adjusted around other cats. She's a perfect cat. She's a medium-height tabby, gray tabby markings.
I think that is a model for aspiration.
Yes,
we should all be as good as this tabby.
All other kittens should aspire to be a cat like that when they grow up. To find out more, call 505-316-2281. Email askfelinesandfriends@yahoo.com or fnm.org.
There's an opening on Saturday, which is really quite extraordinary. The Museum of Spanish Colonial Arts has a show about the Civilian Conservation Corps, which was part of the WPA under Roosevelt during the Depression. And what they decided was the WPA was putting people back to work, and they needed to put artists and artisans back to work. And so they created the Civilian Conservation Corps, and there was a huge component of it here in New Mexico. And so on Saturday night at the Museum of Spanish Colonial Art over there on Museum Hill, they're opening the exhibition New Deal Art, CCC, that's Civilian Conservation Corps, Furniture and Tin Work, and it'll be up through September. They're not going to have a big opening, but it does open on Friday, on Saturday night. People should really put that on their list of things to stop by and see at some point, running all summer long until September. In concert, there's the marimba and African drumming. They have a kickoff dance party for the Santa Fe Marimba Festival, and you can check that out at the Rail Yard Performance Space. That's Saturday.
Valerie Naranjo, whom we interviewed, I think it was yesterday, is amazing.
She is.
She single-handedly changed one aspect of the entire culture of Ghana by integrating women.
Women in marimba.
Yeah, they saw her play and they're like, okay, women can play. Well, they've never been allowed to play before.
Exactly. There are so many cultures in which there is gender definition for activities, and it's not unusual, but I think one of the things that we have all been striving for in terms of women's rights, which in fact is human rights, is that when we open up those limitations, we allow to enter all kinds of diverse ways of thinking about and performing the music. It's a much healthier, it's a much wiser way to run our lives. And of course, on Saturday night is the Meow Melange that's going on at the Lensic. But yes, I do want to give a big heads up to Bob Martin and the Lensic, because one of the things that they have been working very aggressively toward over the last 10 or 11 years is making the Lensic really reflect the community in which it's found. And this is a great example. It's very brave for Bob to have done this.
Well, it is, but also it's the kind of thing they always do. I mean, when she was saying to make the Lensic seem accessible to young performers, I was thinking, Did they not see it that way? Because there's so many young performers who've performed there in the many years that I've been going.
Right. I mean, if we think about Circus Luminous, and if we think about all of the programs that are given over not only to, you know, the sort of 20s and 30s creatives, but to even younger people when they do programs with schools, it's really a resource that we should be enormously proud of. And, okay, here's the plug. Okay, guys, go out and support it. So whether you go to the Meow Melange or whether you go to any of the other amazing programs that take place at the Lensic, like the Lannan Reading with Ann Beattie.
Now, is that coming up next week?
Oh, I'm going to plug it, yes.
Okay.
When I get to that point in the calendar.
I know, but you're so chronological, which I am not. So I'm going to tell you in a non-chronological, non-linear way that the Santa Fe Metropolitan Bicycle Master Plan is being released by the city, and there are two meetings for public review and comment scheduled. Saturday, March 24th at the Santa Fe Trails Conference Room at 2931 Rufina Street. It's 10 to noon. The presentation's at 10:30. And then on Thursday, March 29th, the Santa Fe Main Library Community Room on Washington Avenue downtown from 5 to 7. The presentation is at 5:30. And if you care about the bicycle master plan, you got to show up at this thing. Because I don't ride my bike anymore because of what they've done here in Santa Fe.
I have started riding my bike again, having been sideswiped and hit 3 times in the course of my first 2 years in Santa Fe. I think that we also need to give a big heads up to the city. The Trails Department has been developing bike trails all over the city. So there are urban trails that literally can keep you off the streets for the most part.
Well, they
better. And get you from one end of the city to the other. And they're doing it.
Well, that's good, because if you drive on a road, you're going to die.
Well, if you don't die, you may get very close to it. You know, it's like an end-of-life experience. But I have to tell you that the guys that work down at the Trails Department, the folks, not just guys, have a real commitment. And there are trails that are being developed that also have beautiful art components to it. So just keep your ears open, because there's going to be some amazing community events that are going to go down around the opening and the celebrations of all of these trails.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear it.
On Sunday, the Museum of Indian Arts and Culture has one of the most extraordinary exhibitions. It's an exhibition called They Wove for Horses, Diné Saddle Blankets. And it's about Navajo weavings that were created for the horse. The blankets are beautiful. And within that exhibition is really a kind of history of weaving. It involves Germantown fibers that came from the Friends community in Germantown on the East Coast in Philadelphia. And it's about that hybridization and transformation of imagery. And what you find there is the weaving together, literally, figuratively, all of those things, of both longstanding traditional forms and patterns and innovations. You know, we tend to look at these blankets and think they did the same thing over and over again, but the qualities of the weaves, they've got one blanket that's a different image on both sides.
And so that opens?
That opens on Sunday from 1 to 4, and there's going to be a book signing and a lecture, and it's really a great resource, MIAC, up on Museum Hill.
And tonight at the Legal Tender Lamy Railroad and History Museum in Lamy, the Rattlers are performing, Rattlers with a Z on the end, a classic rock country rockabilly band. And it's tonight, the music is from 9, let's see, no, they're open from noon to 9, and the music is from 6 to 9, and it's free for everyone. And as I've said probably many times now, the food there is really good. And then tomorrow night, Steve Rose is from the Buffalo Nickel Band, also country music, and same time, but Saturday.
The assortment of music, the diversity of music in all of the venues all through the city has really expanded, and it's an exciting reality for Santa Fe to have so much good music that's going on all the time.
Including the Starlight Lounge, Ron Romanofsky, and Welcome to Bohemia tomorrow night. From 8 to 10, no cover.
And on Sunday night at El Farol, they've got Nacha Mendez.
Nice.
Who's just fabulous pan-Latin chanteuse. At the Cowgirl, they got a jazz trio that's doing some amazing stuff.
Is pan-Latin chanteuse an oxymoron?
Well, I don't know. That's what it says in the Pasa Tiempo. I think she's a pan-Latin singer. A cantores.
Cantante.
A cantante, thank you. A cantores. What do I know?
What about the Concordia 5th season anniversary, which begins Sunday at 2 o'clock at the St. Francis St. Francis Auditorium at the New Mexico Museum of Art? Have you heard about that?
I hadn't heard about that, but I'm glad you brought it up. I'm going to move into Monday. You've already talked about Martha Braniff, obviously, and you know, we had shown a film called Playground that was created by Libby Spears. So it's remarkable that the arts and literary arts are getting involved in helping to make this a more obvious disaster.
Yeah, that movie. We talked about that movie on this show when you guys screened it.
When we did, yeah. On Tuesday, there's another good example of how Santa Fe is expanding. Tuesday evening, Salvatore Scibona is going to be reading at the Santa Fe University of Art and Design's Literary Arts Festival called A to Z. And this may be one of the most wonderful evenings. He's going to be reading and then having a conversation at O'Shaughnessy Performance Space with Michael Silverblatt. And Scibona is a phenomenal writer. Definitely worth going out and listening into him.
He's a St. Johnny.
I knew you were going to mention that one. And a remarkable, remarkable writer. On Wednesday night, in concert at the gig performance space, is Trio M. And this is a phenomenal, just gifted, exciting evening. Myra Melford is a pianist, and she's going to be performing with Mark Dresser and Matt Wilson, who make up Trio M. Myra comes from Chicago. She grew up in Evanston, Illinois. But the Chicago Association of Advancement for Creative Musicians really was this sort of spark of innovative jazz and opened all sorts of opportunities. Mark Dresser part of this group used to have telematic concerts where he would connect musicians like at Stanford and in San Diego and all across. I think they also involved Rensselaer in New York. And they would create concerts that involved communication over large space. And all of this group really is about the space between music and musicians and music and audience. So it'll be a fabulous evening over there at GIG. The same night, Wednesday, there's I Can See Your House From Here, the New Mexico School for the Arts Student Showcase.
Do you know what joke that's a punchline to?
No.
I can't say it on the radio.
If anybody
wants to know that joke, come to the baking company and I'll tell you.
Well, I thought it had something to do with the fact that you could see Russia from Alaska, according to some famous past governor.
Well, you know, there was a...
I don't even like using her name.
There was an HBO, made-for-HBO movie starring Julianne Moore as Sarah Palin called Game Change, which just screened, and I don't have HBO, and I am dying to see that thing. I looked at every single clip of it on YouTube that was available, and it's really good. Julianne Moore nailed it.
Fabulous. We're going to have to get that. I'm going to have to get some cable connection in order to do that. I don't even have my TV connected to anything.
Yeah, you might want to wait. Science on the Screen. Santa Fe Institute and the Center for Contemporary Art are collaborating and getting scientists from the Santa Fe Institute to choose movies. And on Thursday, Blade Runner is at 7 o'clock, and it will be introduced by... doesn't say.
Well, let me take it back to Wednesday before we hit Thursday,
okay,
because I'm very compulsive. There's going to be a really interesting project out at IAIA. It takes a village to support an artist. It's funding projects using social media and the internet. And Catherine DeShaw from United States Artists, she's there, ED, is going to be talking as part of the School for Advanced Research speakers series. And it's going to be out at the Library of Technology Center Auditorium at IAIA. So if you want to connect with some of these support systems, get yourself out there. As far as I know, it's going to be at 3 p.m. in the afternoon on Wednesday. And then the Lannan Foundation.
Wait a minute. And I just found out who is introducing. It's Nathan Collins from Santa Fe Institute, who's introducing Blade Runner on Thursday.
Yeah, gotta love Blade Runner. What a classic. Wednesday night, the Lannan Foundation literary event is Ann Beattie. Ann Beattie is one of those writers who has always been part of the New Yorker presentations. Her essays and her writing are clear as a bell, and they really reflect who we are and how we are in the world in a way that's extraordinary. So thank you to the Lannan Foundation for bringing some of the most extraordinary writers in the world
writers,
to our
thinkers,
doorsteps. Writers, thinkers,
types,
poets,
philosophers.
Absolutely. Activists, philosophers, the whole nine yards. Moving on to Thursday, we have a project where, as part of the celebration of writers, the University of Art and Design is bringing Michael Silverblatt, since he's already here, to talk with Scibona. And he's going to be talking at 12:30 on March 29th at O'Shaughnessy Performance Space. So go over. Michael Silverblatt is one of those readers who is a reader like very few others in the world.
He's a talker, too.
He's also a talker, but he reads with such a depth of experience in the literary field that he makes connections, and you sit there and you go, oh my gosh, I hadn't even thought of that, having read the very same book. So,
And Thursday at Collected Works at 6 o'clock, Sharon Niederman is releasing her book, Signs and Shrines, Spiritual Journeys Across New Mexico. And let's not forget at Collected Works tonight at 6 o'clock, there's an opening of a new art exhibit, Sculpted Paintings by L. Scooter Morris. Did you say that one already? Anyway.
No, I didn't. But it's good that you brought it up.
3D, 2D stuff.
Speaking of the arts, I want to just give a shout out to the Screen. They're bringing a film called Gerhard Richter Painting. It's a documentary. It is one of the most brilliant films that I have seen. It's a documentary that doesn't have an agenda. Richter is a force majeure in the arts.
He is a force of nature.
for a very long time, he is very quiet. He rarely speaks publicly. And it's a chance to sort of peek into the artist's studio and to get a sense of how Richter feels and thinks. It's beautiful. It's articulate. It's powerful. I recommend it highly at the screen. I think it starts this weekend.
Excellent. And let's see. Monday, March 26th, is Purple Day. It's a day of global awareness about epilepsy. And we got a note from one of our dear friends who wants to reach out to Santa Fe, Northern New Mexico, and let people know that epilepsy affects over 50 million people worldwide. That's a lot of people.
That is a lot of people.
More than multiple sclerosis, cerebral palsy, muscular dystrophy, and Parkinson's disease. Anyway, Purple Day was founded in 2008 by 9-year-old Cassidy Megan of Nova Scotia, Canada, with help of the Epilepsy Association of Nova Scotia. She's a girl with epilepsy, and she just wanted to reach out to others. A wonderful little girl. There are neurological services available for people with epilepsy in New Mexico, but there's not a lot of support groups, especially for families and children, or for adults who suffer seizures following traumatic head injuries. Okay, so for more information, you can go to epilepsyfoundation.org, and
It's also about people with a variety of seizure disorders that are not always defined as epilepsy.
Exactly.
And I think that we've all had a moment in time where suddenly you can't quite focus. And these experiences are the experiences of life for a large group of people.
And so on Monday, wear purple.
Yes.
Go to purpleday.org. Or go to epilepsyfoundation.org and find out more.
Purple's good. It's one of those colors that mixes blue and red. And if we could begin to think of the nation in a slightly more purple vein, then some of that red might be disappearing. Okay, so other things to put on your list. Gone with the Winds. The Concordia Santa Fe is a symphonic wind ensemble that's pretty amazing. They're performing under a whole series of conductors rather than a single ongoing music director. And at 2 p.m. on Sunday, the 25th, the conductor is Sarah McCoyne. She's the director of bands at Texas Tech. And if you've ever watched the bands at Texas Tech take the field, this is a woman with high energy and a lot of smarts and great creativity. So if you go over there, you're going to be hearing music by Michael Gandolfi, Eric Whitaker, and Frank Tischeli, as well as arrangements of music from Orff's Carmina Burana. And Carmina Burana is a strong force.
Southside Public Library is having its fifth anniversary tomorrow at 11 o'clock at the Southside Library. That should be fun.
Ruth Zipporah is one of those improvisational single performers that just amazes me.
And that's tonight.
That is, in fact, tonight. She's going to be presenting Warning to Wonder, two completely different evenings of improvisation tonight and Saturday at Warehouse 21. Warehouse 21's been reactivated as well. They've got all sorts of groups that are coming through using their space, and it's a pleasure to see the building alive and functioning again.
And tonight, there's an opening reception for Odes and Offerings. It's the City of Santa Fe and the Arts Commission, a project by Joan Logie, City of Santa Fe Poet Laureate. That's at the Community Gallery at 201 West Marcy. You know, we didn't get to a lot of things.
I know. There's so much going on.
It's time to go.
Well, for those who want to hear Baroque music, there's going to be Baroque music 3 p.m. on Sunday at the Scottish Rite Center.
So much to do.
So
Diane
much
Karp,
to
thank
do.
You so much for being with us. Diane Karp is director of the Santa Fe Art Institute, SFAI.org. And thank you so much for speaking of the arts with us.
It's always a pleasure. Mary Charlotte, our star of KSFR.
You've been listening to the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. My name is Mary Charlotte. We're streaming live on the web at KSFR.org, podcasting at SantaFeRadioCafe.org, thanks to Dotfoil Computer Services. You can subscribe to the show on iTunes. You can find us at Facebook.com/Radio Cafe. My email is RadioCafe@KSFR.org. And we're on Twitter at Radio Cafe MC. Stay tuned for the BBC, followed by local news by KSFR's award-winning news team. After that, Jazz a la Carta with Ricardo Perez and Helga Ancona, bringing you the best of Latin music, jazz, and Brazilian music, which I guess could sort of be considered Latin music also. And that's it. Diane Karp, have a wonderful weekend.
Hasta la vista, baby.
Hasta la vista, baby. Hasta la vista. All of you, drive safely, be happy, wear your seatbelts, be nice to others, walk your dogs. What else? That's about it.
Reach out to everyone.
Ciao.
Ciao.